Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. The Bible begins, "In the beginning, God," Genesis 1 and verse 1. The Holy Scriptures open with the affirmation of the existence of God. No place does the Bible set forth a detailed presentation arguing the existence of God. But throughout the Scriptures, the existence of God is asserted and insisted. Without God, the revelation of the Bible would be without meaning. Indeed, it would be non-existent. No passage more firmly contends for the existence of God than Romans chapter 1, 18 through 21. Paul wrote, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." Please take note, dear listener, that the inspired writer said they are without excuse. Those who did not believe in God, they are without excuse. Paul spoke of those of the past who didn't believe in God, and he said they could have known, they should have believed, they should have accepted the reality of God because of the evidence that was before them. Now, God has intended that the church be the pillar and the ground of the truth, which includes the truth regarding him and the reality of his existence. And so we come to this study with the full confidence that there is no argument that the atheist can present that cannot be met, and cannot be refuted, and cannot be overthrown. Those who believe in the existence of God have no reason to fear an examination of the evidence of God's reality. We do not condemn any generation that raises questions. We rather commend that activity of raising questions. But we are confident that if more would investigate the evidence for the existence of God, then the atheistic arguments would soon melt away as does the snow with the coming of spring and summer. Faith in the existence of God, friend, is reasonable, it's logical, it's consistent with everything that we can know. It is necessary to explain many things that we do not know, there being no other rational explanation except that God is. Furthermore, the existence of God is provable, contrary to the idea that some contend that we cannot prove that God exists. Some say it's just a matter of faith, and therefore we can't really know. Why, friend, the fact is, faith is a way of knowing because faith is based upon evidence, Hebrews 1 and verse 1. Our faith in the reality of God stands upon sound, the solid evidence that allows for no other conclusion than the contention that God is. God said, "I am that I am." We're not without evidence, evident to which God's word has pointed that convinces us of his existence. It is not just a matter of what is most probable or most likely conclusion. His existence is the only position one can take if he allows the evidence to speak. Now let's consider for a moment the alternative if God does not exist. We have no explanation for our origin that can be demonstrated. We have no purpose for our existence. There is no reason for our being alive because we, along with all the rest of the universe, would be the result of an unplanned, unintended, accidental chance happening. There would be no dignity of human life above that of the beast of the field. There is no explanation for the universe. The Bible, with all of its high and holy precepts, is but a pious fraud. There is nothing awaiting us after this life but decay in the grave. There is no hope, only chaos. There is nothingness. There is no right or wrong. Prayer is useless, for there is none to answer. Where we came from, why we are here, how we are to conduct ourselves while we are here, where we are going, are all matters about which we can know nothing and for which we have absolutely no answers. Nothing really matters if God does not exist. The darkness and destructive gloom of atheism would overshadow everything and everybody. You talk about complete despair and uselessness. This entire universe, including me and you, are nothing. The arguments for the existence of God do not, however, depend upon how we feel about it. Rather, we have pointed out to us what we might call the footprints of God all about us. There is evidence that we can analyze. We first consider what is usually called the law of cause and effect. This simply means that because something exists, it must have a cause that brought it into being. Now, we all agree, both believers and unbelievers alike, that the universe is composed of both mind and matter. The universe does exist. We're here. And we see it before us. From whence did all of this come? It's not always existed. Because the scientific law that's called first and second law of thermodynamics informs man that the universe is running down. If, therefore, it had to have a beginning, and it would have already run down, if since the world, that's what's happening to the universe. Matter, therefore, has been proven scientifically, matter is not eternal. This is scientifically proved. Furthermore, something cannot and does not come from nothing. Hebrews 3 and verse 4 tells us, "For every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God." Why, the very existence of a house is proof that cannot be refuted that someone was there to build it. You may not know who it was. You maybe never did see the man. You did not see him build it. But it cannot be denied that the house was built because it stands before you. It could not produce itself. Friend, the universe exists. It could not have produced itself. It could not have always been, as we've already noted. It had to have a cause. And that cause is God. Another fact that non-living things cannot produce life. Now, this is a repeatedly scientific demonstrated fact. Some have claimed that scientists have produced life in the laboratory. Friend, this is not true. What they have been able to do is to combine living substances with non-living substances, and the combination lives. But that takes place every time someone eats a meal. Living and non-living substances are combined, and the combination lives. But that's not creating life. And what if scientists did create life? I mean, really produce life. What would that prove? It would not disprove the existence of God. Rather, it would prove what believers in God have been contending all along, namely, that life is the result of action by a living intelligence, a mind, an intellect. That intelligence and mind, friend, belongs to God. Matter did not and cannot produce mind, but mind produced matter. You see, the nest does not produce the bird, but the bird produces the nest. The telescope does not produce the astronomer, but the astronomer produces the telescope. The automobile does not produce the driver, but the driver can produce an automobile. It is reasonable, therefore, to accept the existence of God because of the law of cause and effect. There is no other rational explanation. And just consider for a while the intricate design of our universe. Why, it's beyond our comprehension. The universe, from one part of it to the other, displays a plan, a design, an observable and often measurable orderliness. The precision and the exactness of nature and its uniformity defies accidental origin. Why, you take a wristwatch and you look at it. Did that just happen? Was there no maker? Could such result from mere chance? Was there an explosion in the printing factory that produced the dictionary? It is obvious that our universe had an arranger. It had an intelligent designer. Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament showeth his handiwork. Psalm 104, verse 24, O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom thou hast made them all. The earth is the fullness of thy riches. Friend, when one considers the rotation of the earth, the planets, the stars, the seasons, day and night, the minute designs of nature, the animals, the vegetation, the human body, indeed all of nature, he can really think that all of these things can accidentally fall into place by chance. Who could believe that? The very tilt of the earth could not be other than what it is to sustain life. Isn't it lucky that it happened to tilt just like it was? Just an accident? Do you believe it's an accident? Otherwise, friend, if it was tilted any other way, the oceans would flow north and south to the poles with mountains of ice. If the rotation of the earth were faster or slower, why, the earth would either freeze or burn up. Life would be impossible. If the distance between the earth and the moon was different, the tides would overflow dry land. And how does one explain the fortunate supply of oxygen and nitrogen in just the right proportions? And what of the many interdependent systems that exist, systems that depend upon each other and would have to come into existence simultaneously? Was it just accidental luck that the animal and vegetable systems that depend on each other just happened along at the exact time when the other needed it? Why, such so-called reasoning is nothing short of nonsense. There's a story told about Ben Franklin, who had a large globe of the earth in his office. An atheist admired it and asked where he got it, and Franklin replied, "Oh, nowhere. It just happened into existence. Nobody made it." Well, the atheist was astonished at such a reply and derided him for it. But Franklin showed how the atheist contended the entire universe came into being that way. Why, the folly of the atheist was upon him. Friend, there is the irrefutable moral argument for the existence of God. The very reality of moral concepts, of oughtness, of duty, of responsibility, they insist that God is. Why, you know that rocks and trees and soil and matter, they cannot produce morality. They don't possess morality. They are not accountable for what happens. People everywhere have a moral law that they follow, and without it, human relationships could not exist. There would be no authority, there would be no code of conduct, there would be no workable society. People have conscience and guilt feelings, and when they violate whatever their moral code dictates to them, why, it affects their conscience. Men have what they call right and wrong, and if this is not true, how can one say that it's wrong to say there's a right and wrong? Men understand the need for fairness and for justice. Moral ideas exist. They could not have come from matter. They could have only have come from mind. They had to come from a mind capable of moral precepts. My beloved, that mind is God. Now, this is not to say that all moral codes that men follow are from God. It is to say that the very concept of morality came from God. There are some things that simply cannot properly be learned and applied without the moral teaching and moral principles. One cannot teach human relationships without morality. Sex cannot be understood without morality and the framework of morality. No society can rise higher than its morality, which is a cause for concern of our own nation, by the way. But if there is no God, there is no moral authority. Every man can do just that which is right in his own eyes with total disregard for others, and if that be the case, the result would be total chaos in society. All people in every nation and every tribe recognize this is true. Why, the very religious nature of man argues for the existence of God. Are you aware that wherever man is found, he is found to be religious? There is the universal longing in the heart of the human being for God. Paul called this fact to our attention in Acts chapter 17. This is what he said. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is the Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. He hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed in the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Dear listener, men do not always serve the living and true God of heaven. We know that. But men have created something to which they look to as their God. Did man create God, or did God create man? Where did the idea of God come from? Even though some men mold and make their own gods, men would not have introduced the concept of God because this would have denied men their absolute freedom and placed them under obligation. You know, one of the provocations to atheism is this desire some men have to be totally free and unwilling to submit to authority. Humanism teaches that man is the most, that there is nothing higher than man. You see, some men do not want anything above them, nor do they want to be bound to the laws that are not of their own making. And so they deny God. Those who deny God do so to a great extent because they want to escape responsibility toward God and toward man for how they behave and how they live. Man would not have introduced or perpetuated the idea of God even if he could have. The very idea of God would only have come from the reality of his existence. Atheists can never prove their case anyway. For one to prove there is no God, he would have to assume the very characteristics of the God that he denies exists. He would have to be everywhere at the same time, know everything, have all power, lest the very place he was not, the very truth he did not know, the very power he lacked, would be God. Some years ago, the Russian cosmonaut circled the earth in orbit and returned to announce that he did not see God. Now consider what a small portion of space that he covered. What did he prove? That he was able to orbit the earth proved that there was a design that enabled him to make the trip. After all, God is spirit and invisible anyway. He is not a material being as we are. One cannot dismiss the reality of God just because a man floated in space and nobody saw him. We accept the reality of many things, do we not, even though we cannot see them? Who has ever seen a radio wave? Why, nobody. Men accept their reality on the basis of evidence of their existence. We don't see the germs, but accept their existence. Just because the blind do not see the sun, does that mean the sun ceases to exist? Just because the deaf hear no sound, does that argue that there is no sound? We see evidences of God in his universe, and even more important, we have his revelation of himself to us in his word. Now, while we can know of the existence of the Supreme Being from the world around us, we cannot know the character of God, or our duty to God and our relationship with God, without the Word of God. God has communicated to his creatures through his Word, and the knowledge of his Word is essential to our proper relationship with him. Yes, my dear listener, faith in God is mandatory for salvation. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him, Hebrews 11 and verse 6. And Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me." This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.